Greetings from Toronto, Ontario. I am Shmuel Neft, otherwise known as Rabbi NFT.
And I'm Dovey Kiebman, joining you from Erie, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Millennial Rabbis Podcast.
As Chabad rabbis born in the 90s, we bridge the gap between two very distinct Jewish communities on opposite shores of Lake Erie.
Yeah, so join us as we navigate the complexities of the modern world, offering fresh perspectives on the challenges we face today.
Let's make sense of it all together. Dovey, you and I go way back. Some people in my community here in Toronto actually know who you are because you visited once. They remember you. You're a very memorable character. I think we've known each other for 7-8 years. We were in yeshiva together. We went to Kazakhstan once together. And now we're two buddies who like to talk about stuff.
We like to talk about stuff.
So it goes without saying, most people know Toronto. And I say Toronto, it's Ontario, it's Canada. It's one of the biggest metropolises in North America. Jewish population around 180,000. Kosher restaurants all over the place. I'm a 5-minute drive from my kids' Jewish school. One of many Jewish schools here in town. Did I mention kosher restaurants? Like, we had Chinese food last night. Today's December 25th. We had Chinese food last night, December 24th. Age-old American Jewish tradition. But so, for me, Toronto, big city, not interesting. You live an interesting life in an interesting place. So give us a little word about what you do, where you're from.
All right. So take everything you just said and bring it down a scale of 2 or 7 or 900. Mm-hmm. Basically, Erie is the center of a triangle, essentially. You have Erie in the middle. You got up north, you got Buffalo. To the sort of the west, southwest, you got Cleveland. And down south, you have Pittsburgh. Each about 1.5 to 2 hours away drive. Erie is a wonderful little place. Small place with big potential, in my opinion. But there is a relatively small amount of people saying in the entire county, we have 300,000, less than 300,000. Erie itself, we have close to 100,000 people. And the Jewish community here is quite small. It's quite small. But, you know, every other day I'm finding new Jews, and it's very exciting, and it has its challenges, ups and downs. Like, I'm sure Rabbi Shmuel can share some of his experiences, and we'll get there from episode to episode. But, you know, there's definitely, it's much different than living in a big city, big metropolitan, is that a word? City.
Metropolis.
You'll get to know me here. I don't speak English very well. It's tiny. Everything's tiny, small scale. But you know, when it comes to Jewish people, you know, there was one time a Jew who came to the, I think maybe wrote to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. No, he came to the Lubavitcher Rebbe in person, and he mentioned that he'd written to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Now remembering better.
Our friends are going to be behind the scenes correcting every last thing. By the way.
So he had written to the Rebbe saying that he's a small Jew, I think from Argentina. And he had written about different things. He asked for different advice or blessings, whatever it was.
The Rebbe from Tasmania. I hate to be that Jew that's going to correct you. Tasmania.
Okay.
Different hemisphere. Still southern hemisphere, but.
And the Rebbe zoned in on basically one thing that he said. He said he's a small Jew. And the Rebbe said there's no such thing as a small Jew. Every Jew is huge. They've got background, heritage. They got depth. And, you know, people want to knock us. We shouldn't knock ourselves. We know that we're bigger than that. It's a small place. Maybe quantity, but quality, it's huge stuff.
Right. I actually, exactly a year ago, my son and I made a treacherous journey to Erie. A drive that was supposed to take 3 hours that took 10. Because of the crazy Buffalo winter storm last year, we got to see it in person. Fun. You have to understand. So people that know me know that I grew up in Pittsburgh, which is 2 hours, 1.5 hours south of you. For me, growing up, Erie was a rest stop on the way to Niagara Falls.
Rest stop or bathroom stop?
Bathroom stop. Yeah. Now it's a rest stop. Now that I come to your house, I actually sit down and rest. instead of just going to the bathroom.
Public info, by the way, when it was one of the trips that Shmuel was making to Pittsburgh. He was visiting Pittsburgh. He stopped in Erie. I wasn't home, but he stopped in Erie literally to throw something in my garbage can.
I was literally about to say that. Yes, I came to your house just to throw away some garbage and to say that I was in your house. Yes. And obviously to take, obviously to make content. Why else would I stop in Erie? I'm saying obviously to see you, but you weren't even there. We live in two different places that are absolutely different paradigms. In other words, over here, it's a struggle to look for the small Jew, because the small Jew can sometimes be so hidden. I'm saying I came to this realization early on. So we're about to celebrate being here for 5 years. Early on, it was probably my first or my second Hanukkah, when I went through the hallways of my own condo building, which I knew of, let's say, 30 families in my condo building. I went knocking doors and I lit Hanukkah menorah with more than one family in my condo. And we're saying my condo is a stone's throw away from the closest kosher restaurant. These people were not lighting Hanukkah candles. And so we have this, your main focus. The truth is that all of our main focuses should be the small Jew, the big Jew, the small Jew, everyone in between. But for you, you see that much more in a revealed way. For me, I have to look, you know, I have to look a little deeper. So I think we built up a lot of anticipation in the prep for this podcast. I'm super excited. I'm really excited. Shout out Moshe Goldman. I think we have to give him credit for being the inspiration. Sure. Moshe Goldman, Chabad rabbi in Waterloo, arguably one of my favorite colleagues in the province of Ontario, and there's a lot of them and a lot of amazing ones, but he's a special guy. So he was he pushed you, and you pushed me, and I pushed you back. But to lay the groundwork, we were talking about this earlier. We want to create a podcast. We're going to be recording 30 minutes every 2 weeks, God willing, and we're gonna take this and do it wholeheartedly, consistent. We want to create a space, a program that both our community members are going to enjoy, but also our friends, you know, our friends, classmates, our fellow shluchim, our fellow Chabad rabbis from around the world, and everybody in between. So we're gonna be, you know, doing this, and we definitely encourage all of our good friends to send their notes and corrections. We will, you know, like in any, you know, case of journalistic. Ethical, whatever, we will be more than happy to correct any mistakes we make. And also, please feel free, you know, our audience members, however many there are of you out there, maybe there's a lot, maybe there's a little, to suggest what we should talk about.
Yeah, the funny thing is, by the way, we're sitting here talking to each other. This is not live, it's recorded. It's just the two of us. People are actually going to watch this and they're going to see that we're nuts. What are we going to do?
For you to be seen as nuts is a surprise to people. For me, it's nothing new. You know, someone in shul a couple of weeks ago called me crazy. I said, Rabbi, welcome to a long list of people that have been saying that my entire life. But yes, so we're gonna be talking about what's relevant, what's happening, what's top of mind, and giving our perspectives both from. We have, you know, you and I both are from very different, distinct communities, and we're also from very distinct backgrounds. You know, I come from a background, I became, you know, observant as a teenager. I went through a lot of different phases. In those years, I went from wanting to be a Marine Corps fighter pilot to wanting to be a businessman to wanting to be a Chabad rabbi and everything in between. And I had a lot of choice to make, and I had a lot of battles to fight in my upbringing. By the way, since you're from Western Pennsylvania, also my family, at least I have two sides, my very different sides of my family. I have my Russian family, which, you know, at least my grandparents stayed fresh off the boat until the very end. And then I have my father's side of the family who have been in Pittsburgh and the surrounding area in Western Pennsylvania for the last 130 years. So, you know, Western Pennsylvania is in my blood. So I come from, you know, a different
Yinzers.
What? Yeah, exactly. Yinzers. For the Toronto people, we'll translate that. Yinz means you all. I have to create a dictionary of different funky terms we're going to use.
Actually, I know a lady. She's she lives in Israel now, but she's originally from around here. I'm going to share the story with you once that she basically, she moved to Israel. She made Aliyah, and you know, part of the things that you do, what a person does, whatever they, when they make Aliyah, is they'll go through Ulpan, which is basically learning Hebrew.
intensive learning Hebrew.
Although I do know that like a large chunk of the population in Israel does speak fluent English, but that's besides the point. So
there are some, by the way, I met, I'm sorry for cutting you off. When I lived in Israel, I met Americans that have been living in Israel for decades, didn't speak a word of Hebrew.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So she was doing, going through this Ulpan stuff, and they got to this, if anybody knows a little bit of Hebrew, even, you know, that in English, when you say you, you're talking to first person, there's only one word for it. You. In Hebrew, there's two words. There's three, four, actually. You're talking to a male or a female, or you're talking to more than one person. They're three different things. So they were trying to understand, the people in the class were trying to understand, what do you mean plural you? What does that mean? So this lady is originally from the Midwest, and she looks at them like they're crazy. She's like, y'all! Duh! Anywho.
Tell us about your background, your upbringing. Where are you from originally?
My background, my upbringing. I am originally from a place called Crown Heights, Brooklyn. That is Chabad Lubavitch World Headquarters at Crown Heights. If you haven't been to Crown Heights, go to Crown Heights. If you've been to Crown Heights, you've been to Crown Heights. Good for you.
Hopefully you want to come back.
Yeah. So I grew up in what's called the typical quote-unquote Chabad upbringing, I guess you can say. I was raised in Brooklyn. I have four brothers. My parents and my rest of my brothers still live there. And I went to Cheder. By the way, some words we're going to translate. Some words we're not going to translate because you should just pick
most
up
people know. I think most people know what Cheder is. Yeah,
Cheder's like Jewish school for kids. And I went to the Cheder on Crown Street, Lubavitch Yeshiva. It's called. Which they just had a huge fundraiser to extend their building. It's much bigger than
they extended their building in record time for a Jewish construction project. Unheard of.
Did you know they actually renamed the street?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. What is it? Lubavitch Yeshiva Way or something?
Tomchim Way.
Tomchim Tumim Way. Yeah.
Yeah. And following that, I was in high school. In Hebrew, we call it Masifta, in Ocean Parkway, on Ocean Parkway in Flatbush, nearby. And then I went for a few years to Yeshiva in Morristown, New Jersey, which is actually where I originally met Shmuel. But we didn't really meet then. I saw him there. He saw me.
You were David Zaltzman's quiet friend. I think a lot of people know. I think a lot of people know you as that.
Yeah. Now shout that out we're to all starting to be.
What?
Shout out to David.
Yeah. Shout out to David. It has to be done. I think you're being really humble, Davi. You forgot to mention the fact that you come from a long lineage of Chassidim from Russia. You're named after a famous chassid about whom a book just came out.
Yeah, yeah. David Hardacher, as he was known as. He was a very popular, but also very deep and real person. He was a true chassid, as they call him. He was a rabbinic authority known as a rav. Actually, I'll share a story with you that I just finished reading the book recently. That Shmuel was talking about. There's a great story in there that the care and the seriousness he took with it came to, doing things right. So apparently one time somebody came to him, one of the big shots in the city, where he was in Vietska, it was called. I don't know where that is. Ukraine.
Is that Russia or Ukraine?
I don't know. Anywho, I'm not a...
No, we're not going to do we're not gonna do politics.
No politics, but also not, I don't know geography. I know it's the wrong word.
Someone will find out. Someone will find out for us and let us know afterwards.
Send us a something. Anywho, so one of the big shots in the city came to my great-great-grandfather and with a cow or whatever it was, and they had they shechted it, the Jewish slaughter. And there's a lot of different intricacies within Jewish law to doing it right. And he came and apparently this animal was slaughtered, and there was a question that came up about it. Is it still kosher? So he brought it to the rabbi. My great-grandfather looked it over. He looked it over, and he said, it's not kosher. So the guy had a knife on his... He was a butcher, I guess. He had a knife on his belt. And he put his hand on his knife, kind of giving off the message, like, you don't want to say something like that. You know, back then, a cow or whatever it was, worth a lot of money. If it's not kosher, you lose a lot of money from not... You can't sell in the store. Yeah, it's just livelihoods at stake. So he said, it's not kosher. And he showed off his knife. Like, you might want to change what you're saying. So he took off his hat and he said, you can cut off my head, but it's still not kosher.
Davi, I think you very much channel that energy. So I guess, they say that, there's a lot in Jewish literature, Kabbalistic stuff that talks about the power of a person's name, especially if the name comes from, if a name comes from someone else, that you get to channel, channel that energy. Funny, actually, speaking of great grandfathers, so kind of the story I like to tell about how, we teach a lot about how there's what meets the eye and there's what more that meets the eye. There's the spiritual realms that kind of power the world that we don't see, but are essential to the world's, existence. And so, things happen in the plane of regular, surface level understanding of life, but then there's a lot happening above that that we don't even know, that we can only guess. And so I like to tell the people the story, my merit of becoming a Lubavitcher, a Chabad person and a Chabad emissary, is because my great grandfather, who I'm named after, his name was Samuel Scheer, he was a donor to Chabad in Pittsburgh back in the day, and so I think that spiritually he bought the rights to have a super awesome grandson. So hopefully he's getting a lot of nachas up there.
By the way, you should know about Shmuel. He's a real dude. So when he toots his own horn, he's not really tooting his own horn.
I'm a real dude. You can pinch me and I'll feel it. So transitioning into what we wanted to speak about today, we want to lay down the groundwork for why two Chabad rabbis, very busy, especially right now, it's end of year. Things are happening. How we could even fathom or think about sticking an extra half an hour of work more, because it's not even just a half an hour. It's the half an hour recording, and then there's all the back end stuff, and how we can even afford to be able to do this right now, and why would we put this as a priority? And so the title of this episode, we're calling it Our Mandate. We're basically going to lay out why are we not just leaving the podcasting up to, the Joe Rogans and the Lex Friedmans of the world? Why the two of us have to feel like we have to podcast? And it's, very much based on some of the core principles we were educated with. Going through the yeshiva system and being connected to the Rebbe. The Rebbe, and many people, I know in my circle, many people have heard this from me already, and I love talking about this because this just speaks to me so much. The Rebbe was a paradigm shifter in very many ways. The Rebbe has revolutionized Judaism and Judaism's perspective on the world. In a plethora of ways, sometimes even beyond belief. Once in a while, now I get surprised by things that I learned from the Rebbe's teachings.
Well, just for a second, when you say revolutionized Judaism, you mean change Judaism?
No, not change. Good question. No, the Rebbe never. The Rebbe did not change Judaism. You're very on point with that question. Not to say that the Rebbe changed Judaism, but the Rebbe brought to the fore how Judaism. What's a good word for this? How Judaism utilizes things that exist in creation, and that's exactly what we're doing. So we were talking about this before, about a talk that the Rebbe had given in 1960, and the background to that talk was that there was a new radio program being broadcasted. I think it was only in New York. In the metro area, again, the experts will fill us in, and it was hosted by a man named Rabbi Yosef Weinberg, and what he was doing is he was giving classes on Hasidic thought in the Book of Tanya, which is the treatise, the founding document of the Chabad Hasidic movement, written by the Alter Rebbe, the first Rebbe of Chabad, and he was giving classes. I don't remember what the frequency was. It was in Yiddish, because back then, in the 50s and 60s,
Jews spoke Yiddish.
Jews spoke Yiddish. Yeah, not just Jews in Williamsburg, but Jews everywhere spoke Yiddish. In Erie too, by the way.
Yep.
And he was giving class on Hasidic thought over the radio. And so the Rebbe was
right. Isn't that a little strange? Like, isn't like traditionally we give classes like in person, like in a book, and like radio is like a new invention. We don't do stuff. I mean, obviously, that was a planned question, by the way.
That was a planned question,
but it is a real question.
Let's set the background first for a second. The Jews, you know, we'll start with the Holocaust. The Jews of Europe experienced the Holocaust trauma. The whole package. A lot of them came over to America, and there was kind of two streams in the bigger picture of Judaism. There was the Jews that said, "We're out of here. No, the God, Holocaust doesn't work.
Tefillin off Judaism, the boat.
Yeah, tefillin off the boat. Although the tefillin off the boat thing was really during the big immigrations before the World War II, which is true. I don't know if anyone knows.
We're not only fact checking, we're also clearing up myths. This is good.
Clearing out, yeah. The recent scuba diving discoveries in the last decade, let's say, found a tefillin on the bottom of New York Harbor, because people were coming to the New World. And this is in the turn of the century. Shedding off their, you know, old world identities, and that, you know, religion was part of it. But let's say after the Holocaust, you had the two streams. One stream was saying, we're out of here. And the other stream was saying, we want to maintain our identity, but we're going to build walls to do it. Because one Holocaust is not the end. The Holocaust is going to happen again, and we need to be prepared for next Holocaust. So we're going to build walls around our Judaism. And to keep ourselves and our community safe. And so the idea of Chassidus on the radio was so revolutionary. The radio for the secular, you know, Jewish society was the radio, part of, you know, just like anybody else. But for religious Jews, to hear about Torah being taught on the radio was like every one of the worst sins in Judaism combined, you know? So, you know, what do you say about it?
I know from the outside, so to speak, you know, from talking from an outside perspective, coming outside in, not the inside out, starting that way. It does seem very, yeah, sure, why not? You have something to teach, teach it on a radio, teach it on TV, teach it on a podcast, Instagram, Facebook, whatever it is. Why not? But from the inside out, it's a very, very revolutionary perspective. Very revolutionary, as Shmuel just finished saying. And how do I say this? Everything has a purpose. Every single thing has a purpose. As sometimes we don't see that. Sometimes that's not clear. You know, we as human beings, we believe we have a purpose. You know, important events clearly have some sort of purpose. But the details, the small little things, or the not so small things, but they're like, you know, just daily, day-to-day things. Okay. When I say purpose, I mean a purpose in the grand scheme of things, in the creation. God's master plan. When technology came on the scene and the more it developed, what purpose does this thing have? Many said, it doesn't have any. It's another distraction to distract us from what we need to do. The Rebbe looked at technology and said, This is going to be huge. Let's do awesome things with this. And when you utilize something for something holy, something positive, actually that you're materializing, you're actualizing its reason for it being introduced in the first place. So like what we're doing here, that's part of the revolutionary idea. That what we're doing here, I mean, rabbis have made podcasts. It's not a new thing, but we're different.
We definitely are different. There's no podcast out there that's going to be like ours. But to build on what you're saying, so the Rebbe famously brought, it could have been in this talk, it could have been in another talk, the Rebbe spoke about these ideas of utilizing God's creation where possible in many different contexts. The Rebbe brought up a famous Midrashic teaching of the sages, where the sages say that gold, God created gold for the express purpose of being used to build the Holy Temple. That was the mission of gold in creation. We make other uses of gold. That's fine. That's not the actual use of gold. Gold is made for the Holy Temple. It can be used for whatever you want. So podcasts, okay, or radio or TV or your cell phone could be used for the for peddling the worst things in humanity, right? Like, you don't have to go so far to see what the worst people in the world are doing with their with the help of their phones. But that's not their purpose. The purpose of podcasting is to spread light, is to spread positivity, is to spread Jewish teaching. And we're just utilizing the means that we have. Building on that, the Rebbe was also very expressive throughout the years about the idea of utilizing, I want to use the right word so that the fact checkers don't go crazy. local tradition, local custom, utilizing your local custom for the express purpose of spreading light, spreading goodness and kindness, spreading the message of Judaism. The Rebbe spoke about this in a talk in the Parsha Vayeshev in 57, I'll say it in Hebrew, but I want everyone to understand what I'm saying. 57, 52, which was the winter of 1991. The Rebbe actually said, how do we know that the world is approaching Mashiach times? Because we see that, the Rebbe says, we look at the country of France. When you're thinking, France. So the Rebbe said that France was the core, for many years, the core of the world's spiritual impurity, starting with the French Revolution, which sparked a whole chain of events that showed the real depravity of humankind. And then he said, all of a sudden, not only is France not the same France of 200 years ago, over 200 years ago, I'm sorry, France is now a place where Americans go to learn in yeshiva, right? And so, and he said, and the Rebbe says, one of the things that they do in France is they use Frenchiness. They use Frenchiness to spread Judaism. Now, we don't want to offend anybody, but you know, we both learned in Marstown. We I think in your years and my years also, we had guys from France who were very French, and you know, and we and I learned a lot about how Chabad operates in France. You have Chabad in France utilizing Frenchiness and French culture and French modes of expression to bring people into the fold. And so we're podcasting is the one of the top mediums of expression in North American culture. We're right, both so in North America.
On that point, right?
Yeah.
North American culture. The same thing you just said about France, they're able to utilize the same thing in America. This is why we're doing this.
That's right, exactly.
That you know, Judaism, Jewish communities were always, for the most part, very insular, very just focused on keeping themselves together and not really broadcasting to the outside world, and being very quiet about their own personal Judaism. When the Rebbe came to America and you know assumed leadership in 1950, the Rebbe looked at America and saw what does America do? How does America operate? America is very loud. They're into publicity, advertisement, big, in your face. Right. So the Rebbe said, we want to, you know, connect Jews to their heritage. We want to teach Jews about Judaism. You got to do it in a loud, public way. To keep to yourself ain't going to work no more. And this is why, just coming from Hanukkah, we have big menorah lightings. We have these big, giant menorahs we get on a cherry picker or a scissor lift, whatever. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to note that Torontonians are, at least the ones that have lived here in the last 30 years, are used to driving up Bathurst Street and seeing a menorah on every street corner. Whereas yeah. I think where you come from, it's still the fresh idea that it was 40 years ago.
Yes, yes.
People may not realize, but in America and in Canada, and Canada actually, by the way, in the governmental level with regarding public land and stuff, it's still not so simple as it became in America, but public menorahs were fought tooth and nail in the 80s, when the Rebbe started this movement. And the worst part is that it was fought tooth and nail by Jews.
Yeah.
And a lot of thanks in part to religious Jews, referring to the famous case in Teaneck, Rabbi Brod, which is something that many people can read up about, which was one of the famous cases that brought to fore the legal implications of the public menorah campaign. But I'm sorry, go back. I'm sorry for interrupting you.
Yeah, it's just on that. It's just the same idea that everything big, everything in your face, not obnoxious, God forbid, just everything out in the open. And, you know, to make a big statements, big parties, big. And that's what it talks to Americans. So just by the way, on this podcast, we plan on talking about everything, everything Jewish, everything Chabad, everything to do about, you know,
everything. The world. Hey, look, if we can find a way to understand the impending conflict between Venezuela and Guyana, you know, in South America through the lens of Judaism, then have at it, buddy. Let's, right. You know, let's go. we've already hit the 30-minute mark. It comes very quickly. Yes. When you're podcasting, time flies.
I see that.
So we're going to do like this. We're going to finish up. We're very much, I'm psyched. I'm psyched. Yeah, it happens to be that, you know, today's the 25th of December. You know, it's a little laid back. It's an off day officially, although I'm in my office all day. But I'm making a commitment because I believe, and I think you definitely on the same level as I do, believe in the power of doing this. Believe in the power of spreading the message on whatever means possible. And by the way, when you do that, you elevate spiritually that medium. So sure. When you do good with podcasts, so you elevate the realm of podcast, so to speak, in a spiritual sense. That's exactly what our mission is here as Jews in the world, in the process of bringing Mashiach, in the process of bringing a perfect world, which is the ultimate mission. So being that this podcast is going to be a force for good in bringing Mashiach, I'm going to get straight to the point. I plan on making this a priority, in staying consistent and in keeping up. And hopefully, you know, we'll have an audience that will mirror that and then give us enough of a push to continue doing it. But look, whatever works, like we said.
God willing. Listen, by the way, we're all around topic. I'll end off with this. Our sages say in the Talmud, one of the most complicated but wisest and deepest Jewish texts, tell us that tzedakah mekareves es ha-geula, that charity hastens the redemption. Charity makes this happen. Charity brings positivity and holiness into the world. If you are enjoying this and you are as excited about it as we are, or you're more excited, you can't be more excited. I don't see you standing outside my door with like signs and jumping up and down in joy. But if you are excited about it, please support what we do. You can make a donation to Chabad of JRCC Rockford, where Rabbi Shmuel is.
You can or to Chabad of Erie and earmark it. You know, make sure either one of our organizations, and you can do it in an earmark that it should go to the podcast. Interrupting you again. This may be a theme of the podcast, but
interrupting cat.
We do have some costs involved in making this happen, and we hope that there's going to be a group of people that are going to believe in this as much as we do, and to be the ones to really make it happen. We're just, you know, I have people say, you know, thank you so much for doing this, thank you so much for doing that. I say, you don't have to thank me. I'm the messenger. I'm the workhorse. Thank the person that enabled me to do this. That's who needs to be thanked. So thank you, all of you amazing people out there.
You're watching and listening, or whatever you're doing.
So yeah, your ears are on your eyes. we're gonna have fans now, Dovey. We're gonna have fans.
I know what that means.
whatever that means. And I'm very much looking forward. So
fantastic.
With that, have a great week. Have a great day. Have a great life. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Over and out.